This is Don DeBras Stacks. Dr. Ronnie Yearwood, you should hear this comment here. The person says, we've suffered too much during our curfews and lockdowns to go through this again. They say that we've been COVID-free for over a month, which means that we have been an obedient people. And it is the government now that has to do the right thing to protect us. They go on to say that they're letting these people in, and some of them are getting these certificates without tests, that is, the certificates from abroad. The writer goes on to say that I have a friend in the U.S. who got his certificate by just paying for it without having the test done. And they warn us not to allow these people to come to our island with a certificate and not knowing for sure if they've actually been tested. Much stricter requirements at our ports are required, according to this writer. They conclude by saying, we sacrifice too much for these people to make it in vain. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Let's take a call. You are on the air. Hello?
Hello?
Good afternoon. It's 11 minutes after noon.
Hi, good afternoon. Is Mr. Carter still with you?
No, he isn't. He left a while ago.
Then maybe Dr. Yearwood can help me. I had a patient call me yesterday, very concerned. She's elderly. She's in a wheelchair at home. Her daughter-in-law and grandson are on their way en route from India, coming in on Saturday. So let's say they get tested and they're COVID negative. Because she follows news so intently and she knew that the third time the person got tested, they came positive. She is wondering, even her daughter-in-law is asking me as well, if she goes to the airport and it's negative, can she still tell the authorities, considering I'm living with an elderly person at home, she would not mind going into quarantine voluntarily at an isolation center instead of coming home. Is there any possibility of this happening?
Somebody from the COVID unit would have to advise us on that, what their policy is on it. We can't give you an answer on that ourselves.
Oh, okay. No, I was just wondering if Dr.
But I hope that, they monitor this program, and I hope that they can send me an answer to this particular question, which is whether
grandson was the 10-year-old who came in positive, and thankfully he lived two houses down, but they caught him there, but with the other family members coming in a week later, they're very concerned. They don't want to bring it home, even if they're negative at the airport for 7 days. And they can't afford to go privately, if they can be, they can say, listen, I know I'm negative, but can I please go to the center in light of our situation at home?
Okay, well, we'll seek an answer to that for you. Down to Brass Tacks. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Ellis.
Hi.
And Dr. Yearwood. I wanted to make a few comments which pertain to how we manage ourselves. I have to applaud our country because I think we have done very well. Now, obviously, there are always going to be a few loopholes, but I don't want people to say Barbadians and so on. We got to qualify it. Some people will not follow the rules and procedures. When I returned from New York earlier this year, I came home with flu. I was not aware of COVID-19, but this is what I did. Once I got off the flight, I came home and basically self-isolated. I had to go to the FMH Emergency Medical for just to check on me. And when I arrived, because I have bronchial problems, they did whatever testing and so on. Subsequent to that, I was basically at home. I tried to follow the medication protocols, etc. And I never actually went anywhere around family or friends. And I was not aware of the COVID-19 until sometime later in January, because I came in on the 3rd. And I wasn't aware until I was told when I ventured out. The point I'm making is that there has to be a level of social responsibility for all of us, because the legislation can be put in place and things can be done, to protect us. But ultimately, we have to be our own keepers and our brother's keepers. So if, for example, somebody comes in and you are aware, okay, they're coming from whatever country, high risk, low risk, whatever, you would have to say to yourself, well, look, I know there is some possibility of risk. We have health protocols, the mask, use of masks, the social distancing, et cetera, washing of hands, sanitizing of hands and clothing and so forth. And as far as it's possible, you protect yourself. Now, I listened to much of the debate and so on from the beginning of the year and then with the lockdown and so forth. And I can't help but say that we as a people have to understand that we live in a globalized world and we are dependent on others. If it were possible for us to be self-sufficient in everything, then the borders could remain shut and we could be cocooned here. That's not the reality. So people speak of calculated risk. People speak of balance. And that is what we have to pursue. Now, it doesn't make sense to say shut the borders. Don't allow people in. What you must ask yourself is, if people are allowed in, what are our best strategies to ensure that we as a people are protected and others too, because we have been fortunate and we have relatives and friends in other countries and I pray that they will be well because some decisions were made in a very ad hoc way and it has impacted life. When you watch all of the major news networks and even if you follow on social media, you're seeing death and death and illness will come to anyone at any time. But we pray for the best result. I would think that if people are coming into our country, and of course, they're bringing some measure of support for our economy, you as a person, knowing that there is still a pandemic, you have to take responsibility. So if, for example, I have a guest coming, and that guest could potentially be someone who is infected or pre-symptomatic, asymptomatic, or whatever, what should I do? I should protect myself as far as is possible. If the person is visiting and you have one flat-level house, or you don't have somewhere that they can be separated from you, like an apartment or whatever, what about setting a standard? When the person arrives, you mask up, you do whatever, you keep a relative social distance, and you try as far as is practical to protect yourself and, of course, the other person. We have done well. There are still pockets where people have disobeyed and flouted the laws and so on. And it is better for you to be able to police yourself than for somebody to have to be a schoolmaster and up and don't behind you with a whip. Because ultimately, if you don't take that responsibility, you too are responsible for the fact that we will have other crises. Now, I want to also bring this point of integrity legislation to the fore. I believe Dr. Irwin spoke about it, and integrity in public life. That is critical, because I think the opposition leader spoke to it in the debate yesterday, where the 12-month visa encouraging support for our economy and so forth was questioned. But when you talk about white-collar crime and so on, you don't have to come here to be a criminal. that intention is pervasive in any jurisdiction. What I think we must do, we put all of the health and safety protocols in place for COVID-19. We put as many protocols in place, as much of the legal parameters to protect us, that we are not sought after by OECD and others. But we have to be practical. We cannot survive without money. We can't. Countries as far as Dubai have opened their borders and they have put the protocols in place. If we are to survive, and I mean all of us, the collective, whether government, the private sector, charitable organizations, we have to have money to function. Now, if we are wise, and I hope we are, for the most part, we will do our part in protecting ourselves and, as I said, our brothers. if I have any recommendation for anyone, and I can speak about it at a personal level, we started to do a film short earlier this year to send it on a platform to Engage Arts, which is a Christian organization dedicated to the creative arts. We began, we had our table read, everything was going fine, and then, of course, the lockdown came. We had to cut that. When the changes started to be affected and the restrictions lifted, we then agreed, all right, we can probably follow the protocol and still get this done. What did we do? Everyone had to mask. We did not have large groups. It was one-on-one. It was directing. Cast members came. We did the blocking, et cetera. And as the circumstances changed, we adjusted. Everyone did their part. Everyone followed the protocol. Thank yes. God nobody got ill.
Mm-hmm.
And if anyone did even present sinus problems, they just did not come to rehearsal.
Okay.
And so I made that point, and I feel very strongly about this. We have to be socially responsible. Everything is not in the purview of government. We have to have our integrity. We have to be socially responsible. We have to understand the implications of not having money to run our country.
All right. Thank you very much. Any comment, Dr. Ronnie Yearwood? And just let me remind the public that you're not a medical doctor.
I know. they're giving. I think the caller makes fair points. Is the caller still on the line, or is she gone?
She may well be there. I'm not sure. She's gone. Yeah.
Oh, okay. No, I was going to ask her what were her thoughts, because she mentioned the integrity legislation. To see what her thoughts are.
There is an undercurrent of mistrust that you pick up from people. I mean, I've had one or two comments here on the social media already, in which they are then saying, well, your integrity commissioner, who appoints the integrity commissioner? And you've spelled it out according to the legislation. But no matter what you do, there are going to be people who are going to be lacking in trust when it comes to this system. I think over the years, we've seen so much happen in this country that mm-hmm. suggests that people are able to find ways of trying to evade one rule or the other, that the first major hurdle will be that of building confidence. And that confidence can only be built, or is best built, I would say, where action is taken against anyone who flouts the law. But we begin, from what I'm seeing here, we begin at a disadvantage where people are skeptical about whether this law will really do what is required.
Right, and I think that's right. And as you said, you understand why people are skeptical. I mean, we as a country have been through a lot in the last, I don't know, 10, 15 years. The world has been through a lot. We have these debates about post-factual information and you can see why people are feeling this way. What we can do now, having identified the problem and the mistrust, is to find ways and paths to rebuild that trust. And I think the integrity legislation is one way, but as you rightly said, it's not going to be enough, because people will question whether the persons appointed are independent and whether they themselves have integrity to carry out the work of the commission. And a part of it has to be that persons who come to public life not only come with seriousness, calling, and purpose, but there has to be a baseline level of honesty. And I know that may sound naive, that may sound somewhat youthful to think that we can have honesty. But I truly believe the only way to restore real trust in public life is honesty. So if you say you're going to do something, you do it. If you can't do it, then you carefully explain why you failed to do it or what happened. if a mistake happens and you're in a particular area, you just admit the mistake, you are forthright in that admission, and then you move on to do better. And I think once we start to do that and people can see person's behavior now, we can rebuild the trust. But when you obfuscate, when you block, when you try to cover, when you admit, no, it wasn't a mistake, I did misspeak, or you misheard what I said, when it's clear you were doing X or Y, that makes the concept of trust in public officials difficult. And it's not only politicians, as you would appreciate as well, David, it's the media. The media, it's the legal system. There, people have issues, I think, trusting anything official. And there's a lot of hard work for all of us in professional jobs to do.
No,
lawyers, media practitioners, doctors, all of us. There's a lot of work.
Well, I must tell you, I mean, in everything you got conspiracy theorists,
yes.
And they have grown considerably over the years with the internet. So
yeah.
it is harder these days to convince people of what you perceive to be the truth than ever. Let's take another call before we go to the news at 12:30. Hello. And you know, in listening to the discussion yesterday about the integrity legislation, the Prime Minister did point out that there is also the Financial Management Audit Act, which was changed up in 2018, I believe, one of the first major moves to bring a greater sense of financial accountability to the process. Down to brass tacks. Hello? You're on the air?
Hello.
Yes, hi, welcome.
Yeah, I have a few leave house there for him. And every now and then he threatened my son last year and telling he's going to shoot him.
Well, you need to go to the police, though.
Yeah, we went to the police. But
what happened?
He is saying that he got friends with the police and he parked in his car and he used to park his van in front of the door. Now he got a lady, now parking in front of him. I don't have nobody to come to me because down here small, there's five spots on his house.
Well, I really wish that the police would take your complaint seriously. Sometimes what happens, they get busy. Sometimes they tend to minimize some of the complaints.
I tell you, myself, the reason why I called you two this morning, to know that a lady called me and told me this morning 4 o'clock, he said he's going to threaten me.
Ma'am, you know that there isn't anything I can do for you other than to ask the police to follow up on your complaint. I mean, you know, these are things that if you do not chase them, sometimes they can escalate into something worse. And therefore, I mean, I just hope that the police are listening and monitoring this call and that they will follow up on this matter down in Cleverdale, because they must know that complaints have been made about the situation. There are sometimes situations like this that really are allowed to run for too long, and then people get angry and do the wrong thing. So I can do no more than that for you, okay? Down to brass tacks. Well, I think it's now 12:28, so we're going to transition to the news, Starcom Network News. I see Keith Goddard is already in place to tell you all that is happening around us, including an obvious update on the weather situation. So, I believe. But if he doesn't give it to you, I will. Down to brass tacks, I'm David Ellis. With me is Dr. Ronnie Yearwood. We're taking your calls today. Hello?
Mr. Ellis and guests.
Yes,
good
sir.
Afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
A little earlier on, I heard one of the brothers calling the program, and his query was soap and water versus sanitizing solution. Here is what I understood by the query. If we've got soap and water, isn't that enough? Must we have sanitizing things? In other words, do we have to have sanitizing? That's what I understood. That's what impression you got from this query?
No, I didn't interpret it that way. I think the person was concerned about the extent to which we are using hand sanitizer and alcohol, and making the point that from what he understood, it would be better to use soap and water, which we agree with. However, the problem that we identified is that it is not easy for everyone to have access to soap and water as they move around.
I see. Mm-hmm. Well, I was looking at the purpose of both. And I know that things can be clean, but not clinically clean. And I would think that what I would find with floodlight, I wouldn't find with candlelight. And if the purpose is to get rid of this pathogenic organism, I would rather think that the sanitizing solution would be more effective than just the soap and water. If you look at the operating theater in a health institution such as a hospital, they don't just wash those instruments with soap and water. They go as far as autoclave, sterilizing them, and then they're clinically clean, and you really get rid of what? In more modern times, you get this disposable thing where you use them once and they go. So I really thought that was his query, and I had come to just shed that little light on the two, something being clean and something being clinically clean. But since that was what he really intended, I think I will say good afternoon at this point.
All right. Thank you very much. Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
Mr. Carter
is not here now.
I know that.
Okay.
He said, I agree, you need your mask, whatever. But I don't know with the COVID, let me call them the COVID police, where they're going to stop a van or a private, and if the driver doesn't have on the mask, everybody got to get out. So when the people when you disembark this this vehicle, another vehicle driver that is compliant with what wearing the mask and put you in, or you gonna stand up and wait for another vehicle to another minivan or bus to come? You could explain that one to me?
No, you see a difficulty in having to wear masks on the minivan?
No, but he's saying that if when they stop and whoever, if the driver isn't wearing the mask or whoever, you'll be asked to disembark the vehicle. So I want an explanation on that.
Well, simply put, ultimately the idea here is to encourage people who are working on these vehicles to uh-huh. follow the rules. Uh-huh. I mean, that is as simple as that. Mm-hmm. Follow the rules.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if you are in a minibus mm-hmm. or ZR and the driver isn't wearing the mask, that person uh-huh. is posing a danger to you.
Well, I will be wearing my mask.
Yes, but you'll be wearing your mask, but somebody else might not be doing so. So I think it exerts a pressure not only on the people who are working on the vehicles, but the people who are using them, the consumers,
yes,
to say to them, look, you're posing a danger here. That danger is twofold. You are likely to expose me or somebody else to the dangers of the virus, and you're also likely to expose me to not being able to get to my destination on time. So it is forcing a responsibility on both sides, both the driver and or conductor, and the person who is paying to be transported. That's how I see it.
Yeah, but I could tell you now, right,
mm-hmm.
that passengers that get in on any minibus are ZR van, right?
Yeah.
And that passenger is wearing a mask. And for some reason, the driver ain't wearing a mask. And then stop the driver. The passengers ain't going like that at all. I could tell you that now. You drive a car, so you wanna understand.
You have seen. You tell me.
They're not gonna appreciate it.
You've seen that happen, right?
I've seen what happened. They're not gonna appreciate the fact that the one get home and them in a mask, and because the driver in the mask, you stopping and asking people to disembark.
Have you seen that happen? Let me ask you. Have you seen that happen?
I am speaking about what. Mr. Garza said it would happen.
Wait a minute.
He could put fair people in pickles.
Okay.
And I think that when you're going to, I guess you're to ask, but you know what? Get it right all across. Get it right. Get it down for the cliff restaurant. Get it right down for us. Don't get it right down for us. Don't. And then he could
I hear you say something.
That we have that there's an underlying fear of doubt and distrust, and that is exactly what it is. Tell character, yes, but get it right all over, and don't just decide to pick on certain people and not people. You checked a few days ago, with a popular entertainer. Who else was there? And today, have a good afternoon.
You obviously don't want to talk it through, but what's your comment?
I think I was basically going to ask the caller if before she left if she was on the van and the driver wasn't wearing a mask, how would she treat to that person? Would she say to the driver and the conductor, "Where is your mask? Could you please get a mask before we, you know, begin this journey?" Or would she just get in the van and with the hope that the van isn't stopped or whatever the situation? I just want to understand, how would she personally respond to that situation?
You hear what she's saying. Get it right up there first before you come down here. So that's the other dimension to this discussion. That if you are projecting certain establishments in the newspapers is not doing it right, then the fella down the line is going to say, "Well, what about me? I'm just a little person. Why you come after me first? Go after them." So that issue of the conflict and the contradictions that emerge in the society, that is very real. That's what I'm hearing from her. But it does, at the end of it all, we have to look at this from the angle of, so what is the danger it poses to me? Given all that we have heard about COVID and what it is doing to people's lives, people are dying, people go through a lot of pain. There was a story not so long ago where somebody lost, I think, one leg or so before they died. You know, there is a lot that can happen. So why not look to see how we can avert that rather than dealing with the apparent contradictions that exist? Look, if somebody came off a plane the other day and that person was supposed to be in quarantine and they ended up at the cliff or the other high-profile event that people have been talking about, the people there would be just as exposed as the fellas in the minibus. You know, COVID is not going to discriminate.
I was going to say, COVID doesn't discriminate and choose persons. You know, everyone is exposed. And we've said it here before. I think the first call and the first opening conversations we had for the show in terms of perceptions of applications of policy, how policies apply, it has to be even-handedly applied across the board, is going to be very, very important as we almost go into this, next phase of COVID, if you like, because obviously persons are more tuned in terms of how policy is being applied. And something we didn't have a chance to discuss today, but probably in the future.
What's that?
The distance or some of the gaps that COVID has not opened up, but has shown in our society, whether that's income inequality, whether that may be gaps in education, gaps in wealth, gaps in access to services and wealth. you know, COVID has shown us, or at least has opened up, not only for Barbados, let's also frame this in a larger debate. We've seen that COVID has shown that there are issues of income inequality in the Caribbean, in Barbados, in the world. And then how do you address these things going forward? That's going to be something we have to seriously think about.
Did you know, it also shows that operations that are considered to be big by our standards are really small by international standards, and many of these operations are also threatened.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I've listened to the concerns that have been raised by the people operating the bars. One of the questions that I wanted to put to the Czar was the view that, given the restrictions that they are working under, some of them say we could as well be closed because we don't have enough masks to make it worth the while to continue working, you know?
Mm-hmm.
These are real challenges that people are facing. And the tourism sector, I mean, the whole idea of having the welcome stamp, it's about trying to get long-term visitors so that we shift away from short-term. And this is possibly the beginning of a much bigger plan for tourism in Barbados. Because the short stay visitor spends so much less money. Okay? Mm-hmm. So the idea here is, yes, we're going to get medical schools. We are also going to go into the tourism where people come and stay to recuperation.
Health tourism.
Health tourism. You're looking for people who will be able to stay in Barbados for much longer periods, 9 months, a year at a time, so that the spend is increased as a contrast to what has been the policy over the years. And that is clearly a major policy shift that has been put on the table because of COVID.
Yeah, and not only the spend, but remember, you would appreciate that tourism is often criticized, even though it's a money earner, for not contributing significantly for like technological and knowledge transfer. But if you have that shift where persons are not just short stay visitors, but actually are embedding themselves in the society, they're embedding not only themselves, but their knowledge, their networks. So that, as you already said, that shift is vital and moving away from the form of tourism that we've classically known. Will be an important conversation for the future, and we see the beginnings of that conversation, and we see some problems, and we have to get it right, and we have to have these discussions going forward about what's best and how does Barbados position itself to pay for public services, because at the end of the day, you know, we cannot depend on tax and spend as a way to finance public services and to finance development in the country. We have to re-engineer our money earners, and tourism as a first re-engineering process is an important one.
Yes.